Howdy and welcome to River Talk, hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weiseth. This week, Priscilla is out, but we do have some guest hosts, Emily and Matt, and Zach will introduce them in just a second. Our big topic this week is going to be inflatable kayaking. We're going back into inflatable kayaking, but we've got one of the experts here who's building one of the coolest new things out there. So, Zach, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guests?
Yeah, we have two. Emily Little's the first one. She's an all-around badass kayaker, raft guide, inflatable kayaker. She's even stand-up paddleboarder once in a while. And somebody I've done a bunch of kayaking with. Say hello, Emily.
Hi.
And also Matt Cronin. Matt has a company called Cronin Inflatables. He's a creature crafter, inflatable kayaker, cool guy, and started his own business making inflatable boats. So we want to hear more about his business and also about him and his experience. So welcome, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys want to just jump into some questions? I think a lot of people out there want to know more about Cronin Inflatables. Matt, do you want to kind of give us a background of how you started and why you started it?
Yeah, sure. I also want to say I'm also a rafter. I've been rafting for 10 years before I even started inflatable kayaking or creature crafting.
Wait, let's go back then, because yeah, I didn't know that. I should know that about you. What got you into rafting?
So actually the story is pretty old. I'll try to shorten it down. I grew up pretty poor. We stopped at Zephyr on our way to Yosemite, which is our annual family trip. And I checked the pricing and I realized that I was never going rafting. And, fast forwarded to an outreach program through the Sierra Club, which is basically like all volunteer run. It, you know, basically doesn't cost participants anything. That was my first five trips that I went on, which is just an annual trip. I trained as a guide in 2010, and then I was doing like 30 to 50 river days a year after that, all in while working a full-time job and having two kids and stuff. But that's basically my background. I'm sorry, what was the rest of your question?
Where did you work as a guide?
I only volunteer guided.
Okay.
Used to be called Inner City Outing. It's now called Inspiring Connections Outdoors. It's a outreach program through the Sierra Club. There's like 50 chapters across the country. The San Francisco is the only one that has a rafting chapter. And we take out like, at-risk youth is our target demographic. I got kind of wrangled in because, drug recovery programs fit the bill. So I was invited, through someone that was in, NA as a guest. And that's how I was able to go on the trip.
Well, is this on the American River, I'm guessing?
It's mostly on the American River. We've done trips, everywhere from like the Kings, Tuolumne.
Cool.
I think there was a rope trip once, Deschutes. I know they've done at least once, and the Middle Fork Salmon, there was a trip like 2 years before I started, but not then.
Wow. So that's how you got into rafting, which led you to creature crafting, which we can talk about maybe later if you want to. But I think most of us want to just know more about why you started Cronin Inflatables and how you started it.
So I got, I bought my creature crafts. Let me jump to that real quick. The end of 2015. I think. And we had a great year, and then there was like no water. And it was kind of frustrating. Like I had a full-time job, so I'm trying to go boating and I've got these boats that can do almost anything. And like now there's no water. So I started getting frustrated with that. And I was like, I want an inflatable kayak that can do more stuff. When I went on those, Inspiring Connections Outdoors trips, they had a couple different IKs. We would rent, some high sides and, one of the people had a couple of, outfitters, and my, success rate going through the class threes on the South Fork American were like 40%, maybe.
Is this the high side Cadillac, the big two Cadillac at this moment?
I'm not sure what the model was of the high side. I just know that there was two air outfitters, and then we rented high sides from Pacific River Outfitters. I think. No,
Pacific
no,
River
no.
Supply.
PRS. So whatever they have is what we use, assuming it's the same models. This is years ago now. And anyway, the reason I liked it is because it was a challenge. You know, like you had to try to stay in the boat. You know, it wasn't just like a raft where you just, you know, you could just sit there and make it down all of the rapids on the South Fork. And so I kind of wanted to expand on that. You know, like I wanted to make a boat that you could take down the South Fork and not swim, and you could run harder rivers. You can run more rivers, and it would be challenging, and maybe you'd swim, maybe you wouldn't, but it was like, it was hard. Like you had to, you know, like running the Cal Salmon at a medium flow and like running the upper Gauley. And like, I have to try to stay in the boat on the big rapids. Like, it's not like, you know, but in any other inflatable kayak that I've been in personally, I know that I'd be swimming most of the time in those rapids.
So you wanted to design a kayak that was more stable.
Correct.
Okay. And that's what your kayak is now. Is with Cronin inflatables, is there intention to get bigger and go into rafts or anything else?
You know, that's definitely fantasy of mine at this point. I'm working on a little R2 boat. Primarily it's just the kayaks for now. I'm actually bringing in two new models, for next year. It's going to be a commercial line with thicker material. Hopefully I'm still working on that actually. And they're a little bit bigger tubes on the side. And then they diminish a little bit in the front, like 10% in the front.
Wow. And I think this came up, Eric and I were talking to Priscilla the other day, and she said that you and Jacob might be working on some new design. Do you want to talk about that at all?
So Jacob came to me and wanted his boat's basically dead and they don't make them anymore. He wanted that one altered in a way. And I had some ideas on how to make different alterations than he wanted. That he's on board with. So we're working on that right now. That's kind of a work in progress.
Is this top secret, or can we like ask you some questions about it?
No, you can ask.
So Jacob's boat is the Stiletto, right? It's a much different design. Like the cool thing about the Cronin boat is that it has the upturn, like a ton of rocker in the bow and the stern, right? It's like creature craft like. And with all that rocker, which makes it really stable. Jacob's boat, the Stiletto, the one he uses, is drastically different, right? It's a pointy nose, diminishing tubes. It's a very different thing. And it's something you maybe would swim out of, right? The way you talk about it as something you'd swim out of on the South Fork, it's kind of like that, right?
So, yes and no. The Stiletto actually has some similarities, other than the obvious dissimilarities. One of the things is that the floor that at least Jacob uses is a foam floor. Mm-hmm. So it's really low profile. So you sit just as deep, if not even deeper, in the Stiletto than you do in my boat. And at the center of his boat, the center of the Stiletto, the tubes are really big. I would say that they're at least 12 inches. But then they diminish down to a point at the end. But the seating position is very, very low. Most IKs, like with the I-beam floors are not low profile. And then like air floors have kind of a large bulge in the middle. So you're almost sitting at the halfway point in the tube. Hmm. If that makes sense. So it's drastically different, but there's a couple little similarities. I've never paddled the Stiletto, so I couldn't say for sure. Basically.
So, I mean, I've seen him paddle it. It's when he paddles it, it's beautiful. I mean, watching him move that boat around. And we saw him, there's that waterfall in the West Fork of the Hood. What's that one called again?
Punchbowl Falls.
Punchbowl, yeah. I saw him run laps on Punchbowl and boof it like a kayak. It was beautiful. I probably would have swam every time. I mean, it takes a certain level of skill. And I kind of see the Ugly Ducky, your main boat, as something that anybody can get into and have fun. where the stiletto or this other boat is something where you have to have some level of skill to paddle it. But if you do, you can do really cool stuff. Does that seem right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've actually had that conversation with Jacob. And just a funny thing, he actually says that he can boost the stiletto better than he can boost his hard shell.
I believe it.
I believe that too.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the anyone can jump into it. Jacob always says that the stiletto is the best inflatable kayak. And last time we talked, I stopped him and I said, "Hold on, dude. You know, like, it's the best inflatable kayak for a really good kayak.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the best inflatable kayak for anybody. It's the best inflatable kayak for a really good kayaker." And he's a really good kayaker. So, and he kind of conceded, like, he agreed to that. But you know, like, there's definitely advantages to a boat that's designed like that. Like, that boat is way faster than my boat. Like, my boat is not fast by
Yeah.
any means. But you know, it's not supposed to be. Like, it's not designed to be. It's meant to run whitewater and bigger whitewater. And it's meant to open up, you know, like I tell people, like high flows and things like that. And it's like high flows for an IK, not, you know, like we're not talking about raft high flows. And the stiletto, you know, like maybe Jacob can do that in a stiletto, but other people can't.
I had the same thought. Yeah, I mean, I've heard him say it's the best kayak before. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty cool, and I can see how you hand it's the best for you, but I think a beginner would struggle with it. I remember when we did, I did the Upper East Fork. You and I did the East Fork. Remember that section of the hood we did last spring? I went with Priscilla and Jacob, and they were in stilettos, and we were in the Cronin boats, and they were kind of zipping all over the river, having fun, and we were just plowing down things, not zipping around, but it was pretty straightforward plowing down some of those drops. It's very, very forgiving.
So I think a thing I would add in that conversation, though, because I mean, I have this conversation all the time as someone who has designed inflatable kayaks and things, and we design them specifically for kind of the entry level group of people. Do we have this same conversation when it comes to other forms of boating? Like, I have it in an inflatable kayak, and I think it is relevant. But I've also noticed that we don't really talk about it in the same way when we talk about, like, generally, like, the best inflatable kayak. You know, we're having these sort of parameters around, is it beginner friendly or is it, you know, not beginner friendly? Do we have that same conversation in like hard shell boats or rafts or anything like that? Because I feel like definitely in hard shell boats, there's the same division, right? Like, there's the best boats for the best boaters, but those are the best boats only for them, not for everybody else. Does that make sense? And why do we have
Yeah,
that in this conversation and not the others?
I can't speak to hard shells because I never join those conversations. Like, they just don't have any relevance to me. I've never I learned how to roll, and I hate being upside down, and so I was pretty much done with it at that point. And as far as rafts go, I would say that pretty much, I mean, people kind of have their favorites. But there's no, like, rhyme or reason to it. It seems kind of like what people learned on and what their mentors told them were the best boats is kind of what people kind of, you know, associate with. But I'd say just size as far as rafts go. You know, like a tributary 9.5 versus a 14-foot Sotar. But you know, like Sotar versus Highside or Air or Moravia or you know, any of the imports, you know, like they're just not relevant.
Emily, what do you think about hard shells? Are there advanced ones and beginner ones?
I think there are advanced ones and beginner ones. I think initially my first thought is like a solid, like a Mamba Creek boat is a beginner boat, but then at the same time, people still run hard stuff in Mambas because they like that boat and they're comfortable in it. But then you move to like slicey boats as more of an advanced boat. But then some people still learn in slicey boats too. But I do think that there are more high performance boats for like that are harder to paddle and get the most out of that kayak. Like a 9R or Nirvana, you have to be paddling at a certain level to make that boat perform to its maximum. Like anyone can paddle it and be fine, but to make it really perform like it's designed to perform, I think you have to have a certain skill level.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Like, I think those longer boats now, they go through holes better, but they're hard to move.
Yeah,
So
you
you have
have
to
to
know what you're
really
doing.
paddle them. Yeah.
So wouldn't that be the same conversation here then with like the stiletto? Like, anybody could probably sit on it and go paddle it down like a class two or three run, but to really go run hard stuff in it, there's a skill set. And I think that's kind of the point I wanted to get to with inflatable kayaking is we tend to look at it as the lower skill set boating sport. And I think in some ways, especially when we're talking about the running, the kind of stuff that we're talking about here, it's almost not, it's a different story. Like anybody who's stepping up to those things should have a high skill set and hopefully can get into a, you know, the boat that's appropriate for running that. Does that make sense?
Yep, I agree with that.
So Matt, we've been talking a lot about, I don't know, I think the term is how to make inflatable kayaking cool or how to make it go higher on the rad scale. I don't know. It keeps coming up as a topic. And I have to say, I bet all four of us think that inflatable kayaking is cool. I think that's probably a correct thing to say. We all do it quite a bit. You know, Eric, you guys, I mean, your company specializes in inflatable kayaking, so I'm assuming you think that's the case. And I mean, what do we, how do we do that? Do we even try, Matt? Do we care? Is there something we can do to make it, can we name it something else?
I don't care. I really don't. Like, people have their thing, and like, I'm not looking to change anyone's mind that doesn't want their mind changed. I was just having a Facebook conversation with Jesse Fisher. I don't know if you're familiar with who he is. He owns Class 5 Adventure Gear in Idaho, and it was a creature craft conversation about, you know, like the haters and people talking smack, and I made a comment that, you know, like, a lot of the people that talk smack to me about creature crafting, I run harder stuff in my ducky than they run in any boat. And, you know, like, it just kind of doesn't register. And then he made a comment that you know, he run like he took my bed or something like that. I don't remember the context. I think he misread something, but you know, like, he's a way better boater than I am, and he doesn't talk smack about creature craft. He doesn't care. He thinks it's cool when he sees someone like Mark Kramer run the Grand Canyon of the Stikine in a creature craft. And, you know, like, he's one of the best cat boaters, so like, he's kind of one of the people that Jesse looks up to. So there's a lot of people that no matter what, they're just going to talk smack. You know, like, no matter what, people are going to talk smack about Jackson because it just seems like that's the cool thing to do.
Emily and
A
I had
lot
this
of
talk
people,
last night.
you know, like, it's, and I think Jackson's an awesome company, and, like, you know, I've met Eric and his, you know, at least a couple of his kids, and, like, they're all cool, and Nick's cool, and there's no reason for it. Like, people are just, they just want something to talk smack about.
No, I do. I think it's fun. I like talking smack, so I'm going to continue to do it. And creature crafts are an easy target. That's kind of, I think that's why they get talked smack about so much. But I think that the discussion is like we, I think I would like to expand the sport of inflatable kayaking. And I think you're doing it. I think you're creating a boat that has enthusiasm behind it and is just really user friendly and fun. And I think you're helping do that. And but we is there anything we can do? I think it's the name. Like, are you okay with the name Ducky? Do you like inflatable kayak? We've been throwing around calling it high performance inflatable craft.
Rivercraft.
High performance inflatable river craft. Yeah, like, is it the way we name it? Or, I mean, is there anything, should we even try to make them cool? And I'm
You know,
separate than talking smack.
if there was, if I guess if you could come up with some sort of acronym that sounded cool, like hipper arc, like that's not cool. But as far as me personally, I went with I named the boat the Ugly Ducky on purpose. One, because it doesn't look like any other inflatable kayak, and it's kind of ugly. And two, even when I had the prototype, a couple of people are like, "That doesn't look like a ducky. That looks like a raft." And I knew that was going to be kind of a thing. And I don't care, but at the same time, like, just kind of to stall argument, I just named it a ducky. It's a ducky. Like, what's the definition of a ducky anyway? You know, like, it's just a bland river term.
Yeah, I I think it, I mean, at first it looked really weird and awkward, and it looks normal to me now. When I see one, I'm like, yep, that's a ducky. That's a Cronin boat. It's become a very normal thing for me to see on the water now, where at first it seemed very awkward.
I get a lot of that. One of the biggest concerns that I get is from shorter people that are concerned they won't be able to see over the bow. And it just takes a minute for people to get in it and actually paddle it, and then they're like, yeah, it's not an issue at all.
Do people ever kneel in that boat?
Some do. Typically raft guides like to single blow. And I don't get it at all. Like, I ask them if they've ever seen a kayaker paddling a raft with a kayak paddle,
No, I mean,
and they're like,
do they kneel with a kayak paddle?
I do it. I mean, I think anyone that does a long day does it. One of the things that I like about my boat is because it is so stable, it frees you up to do all kinds of things. Like, you can sit on one of the tubes with your feet in the water and it doesn't flip over. So sometimes I sit on the thwart. Sometimes I kneel in the boat. Sometimes I like kneel on the side tubes. And usually it has to do with, just being a long day. And we're paddling, like a flat water section or something. And I'm just kind of, like not getting cramped.
Where do you see this industry going? I mean, I think this is your boat's a great sort of design change that's opening up, new types of whitewater to, I think, a huge demographic of people that you're right, like the Stiletto and kind of the boats that were out there before that were the really high performance, the kind of things you were going to go run the truss or the Little White or whatever, be it a Stiletto, be it the Sotar. Those boats that are definitely have a high skill set required just to kind of get in them and go paddle the easy stuff or the medium level stuff. Your boat brings a lot of stability and things, but yet still the ability to go run that really hard stuff. Do you see that changing where the industry's going and the approachability of inflatable kayaks to the harder whitewater for people?
I don't know that I would word it like that. I don't think that the industry's really going to change much. I would like to see more people paddling whitewater. I think that my boat is a great beginner boat. I actually talked to a couple of outfitters trying to get like intro to whitewater, do like a full day or like a weekend long class. With, like instructions, just some basic instructions and like, like some throw bag training and, just some basic stuff and how to paddle and like what you're looking at, what you're trying to identify on river. And then part of it is you paddle my boats down and you can actually, someone that's never been before, I've taken several people now, down class three whitewater, successfully without swimming. And everyone's like super stoked at the end of the day, and they're like, wow, this is great. Like the last guy I took down is like a Russian River, which is in the Sonoma County in California. It's basically flat water. It's like there's maybe some two minuses on there, and people go and canoe it. And that's what this guy did, is he canoed it all the time, and he was pretty nervous. And I took him down the South Fork American, and he ran all the rapids. He didn't skirt anything. He didn't portage anything, and he just paddled right through everything successfully. And he was super stoked at the end of the day. And I'd like to see a lot more of that. Like a lot more of people that are just getting into it. They're like, "What is that?" And something that's really common down here on the South Fork, anyway, is because we're right outside of Sacramento, which is right outside of San Francisco. So there's a huge population base, and it seems like most of that is hard shellers. And I've talked to a lot of people, and they're kind of frustrated after the first, 2 or 3 months when they still haven't been able to go down the gorge because they're doing the class two section in between because they don't have a good roll yet, which is the responsible thing to do. But in a ducky, you can just go.
Yeah, and it'd be a great way to see the gorge. But I mean, and when I was a kayaker, we did Kolomar Lotus, I don't know, 30 times before we finally did the gorge. And it would have been nice to see it once, at least before kayaking it. You know, I luckily I was a raft, I had raft guide friends, so I saw the gorge before I kayaked it. But a lot of my friends I was learning with had never seen it, and we all could have done it in an inflatable kayak, but we're still developing our skills to be able to hard shell it.
Right.
Eric, I want to ask you that same question. Do you think, I think you're basically asking Matt, do you think his design is going to change the inflatable kayak industry? Do you think it will? Do you think that
Well,
the other
I
companies have
think
changed their designs somewhat?
this has the potential to change the entire kayaking industry. In
Including
the
hard
sense,
shell?
if I was a hard shell company, I would look at this as the biggest threat to my company out there. Because kind of throughout time, like to run that harder whitewater, you really like there was some IKs out there, a Stiletto and some of those that you could go run that stuff in, but you still really had to have a pretty high skill set. There was a lot of time investment to get there. And so it wasn't that common that people got that far. And the hard shellers, you're putting in so much time. If you don't start, when you're really young, you're single, you've got lots of free time, like you're never going to get to that level if you don't have the thousands of hours to invest in learning it. Whereas, to this point, I mean, it's what our company specializes in is taking people who've never been in an inflatable kayak and go run class 3 and 4 day one and do it successfully. And I think, you can't do that in a hard shell. So you can go run some really cool stuff, get into the sport, build confidence so much easier in an IK than you can a hard shell. And as people have less and less free time, they've got a higher diversity of sports they're trying to participate in or activities they're trying to participate in, all of those things. Being able to get into these cool places, run the hard stuff, go have these big adventures without having such a huge investment of time on the front end to learn the skill set. To me, seems like that could be an industry-changing paradigm.
Do you think this makes the market bigger, or do you think Matt's boats could cannibalize hard shell kayaking?
I think it makes the market bigger overall because same thing. Like what he's talking about, you've got this huge group, you've got a huge population of people that aren't going to take the time to learn to hard shell, and they aren't going to take the time necessarily to learn all those skills, or they're not going to go out and buy $10,000 worth of rafting stuff. But this is cheaper, it's easier, it's less time, it rolls up in the back of their car, and they can go learn kind of the basics of whitewater and go out and run, from the easy stuff to the really hard stuff. And then I think you'll get the kayakers that it's like, well, I'm a decent kayaker, but I'm never going to be a great kayaker, but I can hop in this. Like running Canyon Creek in Washington, would maybe be like right on the upper end of my comfort level in a hard shell boat. But like I hop in this thing and like, bam, I can go pound that out and have a great time and not be scared out of my mind the whole time. I think there's a big population of those people.
That sounds scary to me, actually, running in Canyon Creek in an inflatable kayak.
Oh no,
It's actually a lot of fun.
It's super. Yeah, it's good to go.
Really?
I would do it.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
Emily, you'll hard
it's
shell it, so that's.
super. It's super approachable.
Yeah, but I mean, I took a inflatable kayak down, one of Zach's new ones down the Arleta the other day, and I was scared. I was like, I'm gonna swim for sure. And I got in it, and it's so stable. Like, and I like have some friends that are nervous about getting on their Arleta, and if they could just see it in an inflatable kayak, they would see it and then learn that, see whether they could or could not do it in their kayak.
And that's, I think the discussion we're having is kind of crazy, is we're hard shell kayakers saying, oh, let's go see it in an inflatable kayak first to make sure we can hard shell it. That's kind of crazy to me, right? That maybe we should just be inflatable kayaking. Right?
There's some real truth to it. I think in really long, consistent stuff where, if you swim, like you're in trouble because it's, class 4 whitewater for the next 2 miles. There's that, maybe that like truth doesn't hold, but things where it's like, yeah, I can swim for a little bit, but I'll get to a pool. I think inflatable kayaking opens up a lot of doors, like holes that are scary in a kayak and like a hard boat. IKs just skip over the top of, like a lot of the time, like keeping your bow up and floating and getting over, like especially pour over kind of stuff, is a lot easier in an IK than it is in a hard boat. Like the skill set is a lot lower. The required skill set, maybe, is a way
Yeah.
to put it.
I mean, I'd rather get beat down in an IK than a hard shell. One of my goals in life is to never get beat down in a hard shell again. And I'm doing bad at it. But when you get beat down in a hard shell, you're getting flipped. It sucks. Like, it's just not pleasant. Where in an IK, you just swim. You know, you don't have to deal with the window shading and all that.
And then you can climb back in. Like, that's the other piece is, like, you get to your boat, flip it over, and you're back in the boat and going versus, you know, you swim out of a hard boat. Like, you've got a pretty big problem. Like, you've got to get your, you know, anchor, your sea anchor to the shore, and, like, it just sucks.
Yeah, whenever I do swim out, probably 80, 90% of the time, I self-rescue myself before the rapid's even over. Like, I don't even wait till the end of the rapid. I just jump back in. And before we skip past it, you mentioned skipping over holes. And that's actually something that I'm still kind of learning the ability of my boat to do. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Energizer on the upper dolly. It's that hole in Sweets Falls where you see, like, rafts and creature crafts getting beat down all the time.
It's on the right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I got a guy, Carl, that lives over on the East Coast, and he started running the Energizer in the Ducky because it's the easier line. It for my boat. Everything that I was ever told about it is like, don't go over there. Like, it's just a horrible beat down. And, you know, like, people get worked in there for, you know, sometimes 20, 30 minutes. He's like, no, just follow me. And we went, and it's the only time that I've cleanly run Sweet Falls is running the Energizer.
Cause your boat can just plow through the hole.
It doesn't dive. So when it goes off the drop, it hits, you know, it hits the hole and just kind of turns up and keeps going. And it wasn't even like a difficult thing. There's a lot of holes that I've been through that, you know, like, you paddle in, the boat stalls out, and you're paddling as hard as you can, but you can see that you're not making any forward progress.
Yeah.
And you're just, like, paddling as hard as you can, like, hoping that the current changes. And I've paddled out of rapids many times like that, but, like, just sitting on the bubble,
Just
hoping it lets you go. And this particular one, the Energizer, wasn't like that at all. I just, you know, like, just kind of paddled right through it.
Have you done Giant Gap yet?
I have not done Giant Gap. But I've just been busy. I actually plan on, I planned on doing it this year too. So that's kind of, you know, like, I'm kind of full of shit, but, I want to do Generations Gap because, like, my boat is amazing for that kind of thing. You know, like, hiking in and doing harder whitewater. And, you know, like, one of the things that my boat does is you fold it, inside out, basically, and you can use it as its own backpack. And we figured out on the Chetco that for, you know, 2 or 3 miles, that's totally cool. But for 9+ miles, it's not cool at all. And we had, you know, 40, 50 pounds of gear on top of that. But then it's just the thigh straps from the IK that are sitting on your shoulders.
It's rough.
Like, no kidney pads, no anything. It was really rough. But I would do that. I would do that no problem on Giant Gap or Generations Gap. The trails are all downhill the whole way.
Yeah. And it's only 2 miles.
Longer, 3 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a drop on Giant Gap Locomotive. I would love to know what your boat does at Locomotive. That would be telling for me. It's one that hardshell kayakers get beat down all the time in.
Interesting. Yeah, I the only ones I remember is Five Alive because we swam. And then I think it's Dominator.
Yeah, Dominator's cool.
Anything other than that, like, it's kind of a blur on the Giant Gap section.
Yeah. Yeah, going back to what we were talking about, whether these Corona boats can change the industry, I kind of think that my general thought is that inflatable kayaks, I'm going to answer that question, even though you guys haven't asked me. I think that inflatable kayak design hasn't changed for the most part in like 20 years, right? Eric, you designed that boat, and that's innovation, that the boat you guys designed for Orange Torpedo with Sotar. And I think there's been a few changes, but I think for the most part, they've just made these pointy things look like canoes that pump up, and they haven't thought much about how to adjust the floor height or how to make the tubes different sizes or widths or lengths. They're just, the inflatable kayak manufacturers are just pumping at the same thing year after year, and not many people have innovated. And I think that Matt's innovation is either going to kind of start dominating the inflatable kayak market, or we're going to see more of the traditional manufacturers start making changes to be more like his boat, or making, doing something to make them more stable. So I think stability is a big deal.
Well, I think there's kind of two markets, really. There's the I think you're right. Like, there was sort of the commercial, river guided trip market, where we want to make big tubes, have you sit really low in the boat so they're super stable, hard to fall out of. And that market, there's not a whole lot of innovation needed there. Like, have a low floor and big tubes, and people are going to go pounding down through the river, and we sell them to outfitters. Like, we don't need to innovate. And then there was the really high performance side, which was, the Stiletto, and again, like the Sotar. There's a few others in that
The
market,
thrill
but
seeker,
thrill seeker,
thrill
yeah.
Thrill seeker, yeah. Thrill seeker is the one I would think of. Yeah. So, but what they were doing was essentially trying to copy hardshell boats. Like, we want to have a boat that paddles like a hardshell boat, but in an inflatable version. I mean, Air, like, probably got the closest as far as the way it looks and everything, like trying to do that, something you can roll, like all of those things. What I like about what Matt did here, and our design was really more oriented towards trying to have kind of the beginner boat, like that's really what we were going for, but with a little bit higher performance, but not something we never intended it to be run on, like class five stuff. Like, that was just not what we were going for. This, I feel like, is all of a sudden somebody looked at inflatable kayaking from a performance side and didn't try and make a kayak. Like, making a hardshell kayak wasn't the end goal. And so now you have this kind of fundamentally different, really cool design that brings a whole new paradigm.
Yeah. I want to switch over to the manufacturing. I think your story about having them made overseas is really cool, Matt. Do you want to talk about how you chose to have them made overseas and your experience doing that?
Sure. So originally, my hope was to have a U.S. manufacturer manufacture them. And the cost, even just to make a single prototype, was just not realistic. The amount of hours that they claimed it would take to make a, like to do the CAD design and to do the basically just all of the back work and then actually produce the boat, it was, like almost $10,000. And it just, like, that wasn't in my budget. So I didn't want to just give up. So I started Googling just anything that I could think of. And it took me months to find someone that was willing to do it. And then I found that company, and we went back and forth for another 2 or 3 months, sending, like, pictures. I would draw something and they'd be like, "Do you mean this?" And it would be totally wrong. And then I made, I don't know if you know what Sonnet tube is. It's that, the super dense cardboard, tubes that they pour concrete into for, like, foundations on houses. And I made a full size 12 inch tube, my boat, but, like, out of cardboard and duct tape. So then I, like, took a bunch of pictures of that, sent that overseas. And then they're like, "Do you mean this?" And I'm like, "No, like you literally have a picture of it." And so we went back and forth. And then they're like, "Oh, we can't make that." And I was like, "What the?" And so then I went back to Google and I started more and more search, 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 search. And then I found another company, went back and forth, and they're like, "We can do it. This is how much it's going to cost." And I was like, "Cool." So that was the first prototypes I bought. I learned you have to be, like, really careful on, like, literally every specific of everything. And the first one, there's my promo video that's on the website, and the straps on that boat, like, exploded. I mean, it's a 30-ish, 35-foot waterfall that's almost vertical, and the dude was, like, almost 300 pounds, and the strapping just couldn't handle the impact, and it just kind of went. But I've solved that problem. I used it's 600 kilogram or 1200 pound brake strength. It's basically the same stuff that NRS straps are made out of, or the same strength that NRS straps are made out of. So just, like, different things like that evolving, and like having to deal with the overseas part of it. But yeah, like, lots and lots of research and just, like, never ending problems. And I'm actually in the middle of that for next year right now.
How many boats do you order at a time? Is it like a once a year you get like a huge number of them, or they come like every couple of months?
Kind of. So last year my order came in July and I ordered 55. And then I wanted to make sure I actually had my order for the season, because in July, like the season's kind of ramping down,
Yeah.
or at least it's like it's halfway done, maybe not ramping down, but and this year, last like October-ish, I ordered 100. And it ended up actually being like 105 or something like that. This year I'm ordering a little bit less, because there was that last year to this year overlap. It wasn't even a year. So I didn't quite go through all of my inventory. And then plus I have the other models that I'm bringing into the commercial ones.
Also, I want to hear more about the commercial one, because I, you and I have talked about a little bit about commercial boats in the past. How is it different, other than thicker material? Is it the same design?
It's basically the same design. So my boat is 12-inch tubed all the way around.
Yep, perfect.
And the commercial boat is going to be 13-inch tubes on the sides. The first upkick is 13 inches as well. And then the second upkick narrows down to the front tube, which is going to be 10 inches.
Okay.
So it will probably, I haven't actually seen one in person yet, only the CAD designs. It will probably be a, I don't know that it'll be like noticeable. I don't know if people will be like, oh yeah, that's diminished, or they'll be like, why does that one look different? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's a similar design.
It's basically the same design. It still
Okay.
has all of the rocker. It's just, it'll be 1 inch, the top will be 1 inch lower
Okay.
than the standard one, because it's
Yep.
double overhead.
Yep.
But other than those things, and then I'm working on getting the thicker material, because the outfitters that I've talked to, like, they don't care about weight, they don't
Yeah.
care about that kind of stuff. They just don't want to have issues. And while the new material that I had with this the last order that I had, has been working out great. The first order, there was a couple boats. It seemed like there was color issues, maybe. Like some of the colors weren't
Sorry, when my
one.
phone, when my cell phone rings, it makes my computer ring. It's a whole thing. It happened last episode
That's
too. I need to turn it off. It's like, have you
not.
guys ever seen The Office when they had the woof? There's an episode, there's this thing called the woof where your like fax and your email and your phone, everything will go off at once. That's what happens when my phone rings sometimes. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. So the I feel that the 0.9 millimeter that we're using now, it's the threads on the inside of the PVC are denser, and that seems to have alleviated any issues that we had with the boats tearing and that kind of thing. That being said, like the outfitters say that they don't care how heavy it is and they want a thicker boat. It's
Yeah.
going to make it a tiny bit more expensive, but I don't think it'll be that big a deal. And then they'll have, it'll be basically made out of raft material and shouldn't be any issues.
So I haven't paddled one of your boats yet, although I definitely want to get out in
Oh,
one.
you've got to try it.
Do you have a foam floor or is it a air floor?
It's a drop stitch. So
Okay,
it's a
yeah.
4-inch drop stitch, and then it's rockered up at the ends to kind of fit the bottom of the boat.
Yeah. And so do you go to, because you're doing drop stitch, do you expect people to pump it up to a higher PSI than you would if it wasn't drop stitch? Like a, I-beam or something like that?
I mean, definitely. I don't know how much higher. Like a I-beam floor is what, 2.5 PSI before it starts venting.
Yeah.
I think pretty much everybody is pumping it up harder than that. I pump it up pretty hard. I like it just because it does, add a little bit to the performance. I think I want to say like 12 PSI is what I'm putting it at.
Yeah, wow. Okay. That's a hard floor. Awesome.
Yeah.
And then you were talking earlier about your floor height in your tubes. So have you recessed your floor up so you're actually sitting higher than like midline on the tube?
No, it's essentially a flat bottom boat.
Okay.
There's little channels from, you know, like where the tube and floor come together. But it, basically the tube and the bottom of the floor are the same depth.
Gotcha.
So cool. Matt, go ahead, Eric.
I want to get out and paddle one. They look like a lot of fun. I've been watching them for a little while and I've always thought they looked like a good time, especially on kind of steeper, creaky stuff.
Great.
So that's what I was asked next. If people want to check out your boat, if they want to try it, how's that possible? Like, let's say you live in Portland, for example, how would somebody try out your boat?
So Portland, I have, Goodwater Boatworks is selling my boat. I think pretty much everybody in that area knows those girls. There's also, you know, I'm blanking on their name. They don't even have their boats yet, but they're going to have a boat. What is the company in Eugene? Do you guys know?
I don't know.
Raft. Anyway, there's going to be a retailer in Eugene.
Wow.
I've got Class 5. Jesse Fisher with Class 5 is selling them in Idaho, as well as Moravia, or Cascade, I should say.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't know that.
There's also the River Store in Coloma has demos. Southern Raft Supply in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Golden River Sports in Denver. Trying to think who else. There's a couple different outfitters. There's North Umpqua Outfitters has one that you can go and paddle. They charge obviously, but you could get in one and try it out. As well as Adventures in Whitewater in Kremlin, Colorado. Probably the biggest, easiest is anyone that is outfitting a Grand Canyon trip. Moen Kopi has 6.
Wow.
I think you can request with your trip. So that's, you know, a great way to demo. You know, your whole group can demo them for a couple of weeks.
Wow. And can they buy them directly from you too?
Yeah. So I have an online store at croninflatables.com. Pretty easy to find. And I feel like I'm easy to work with. There's a store that you can just purchase it and you don't have to, you know, like, you don't, it's just, you know, like an online store. You just purchase it and I'll send it out. But I also work with people, you know, there's 2 different sizes. There's a small and a large. And through my experience, I would say that actually, both boats work for pretty much anybody. I'm 6'5" and like 225 and I ran the cow salmon at 4.47, I think, in the small. I've run several things in the small, and I also run stuff in the large. And I've had people that are around 5'6" say that they like the large better. So if you're not sure which one you want, you know, like I'm happy to talk with people, especially if they're buying from a local retailer. I'm always more than happy to help make sure people get the right one that they want.
Cool. Yeah. Well, the last thing I want to ask you is I think this, we thought about interviewing you after talking to Priscilla about this new boat that Jacob was going to work on. I'm very fascinated by it personally. When's that going to be out there? When can we try that out?
I don't know. There's what Jacob wanted to do. I don't know that it's possible, or at least, I mean, anything's possible, but I don't know that it's practical in a production boat.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way that the programs work. And he basically wants to combine two different methods of boat building. And I don't think that they can do both at the same time. So we're working on like a different fix that I think is going to work. But I unfortunately don't have an ETA for that.
Wow. It's a cool boat.
Do you come with an engineering background? Like, how did you get to where you were trying to figure all this out? Like, it's super cool. I'm fascinated.
So I do not. I come from a long line of engineers, so maybe it's just in my blood. I think for like three generations at least above me, there's several civil engineers on my dad's side of the family. But as far as me, no, I just like figuring stuff out and like tinkering and messing with stuff.
That's awesome. I think it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, well, those are all the questions I have.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on this. Thanks for coming on the podcast today and answering these questions and telling people about your boats. And thanks for coming up with something new and cool and bringing it out there and opening, I think, the door for people to run harder whitewater. You know, people that probably never would have gotten to that point now have something that I think will open that door for them. So very, very cool.
Really appreciate having me on, and hit me up on Facebook or my emails on my website, and we'll see how I can get you into a boat at some point.
That sounds awesome. Definitely will do that. Awesome.
Should we try gear of the week?
If you've got some.
Oh man, I have to look around. I have nothing, but somebody else can start. And I'll think of one really quick.
I don't have anything this week. I haven't been out boating since we last talked, which is usually when I come across things that's like, oh yeah, that's an awesome thing. I love that.
Emily, cool. do you have any gear of the week?
I have, it's sort of. I recently put a hole in my spray skirt. Don't know how I did it, but I was paddling with Zach and then had a hole in my spray skirt.
It's not my fault.
It's not your fault. No, I was messing around. But I was like, man, how do I fix this? I don't have time to send it in, but I need it for some trips coming up. And so I was at Next Adventure in Portland looking around for seam seal to fix my skirt. And she was like, oh, we don't have any right now. But what I've done before is sewn it with some floss because dental floss is really strong, and then put Aqua Seal over it. So I tried that, and it was like an inch long tear in my skirt, pretty big. So I used a Speedy Stitch needle because they're very heavy-duty, strong needles, and with the floss, and sewed the hole together and then put two layers of AquaSeal on it, and it's a Frankenstein-looking patch, but it's not letting water in. So I was pretty pleased with that fix.
Yeah, I saw it yesterday. It was legit. How long did it take?
Like 5 minutes. I mean, maybe longer because you need to let the AquaSeal set for two layers, but it was an easy, fast fix that... I mean, I had Oxil at home and I had a floss at home.
That's awesome.
I was going to ask, have you guys done a gear garage on Aquafuel?
No. You mean like the little YouTube videos?
Yeah. Local gear of the week or whatever. Aquafuel is amazing.
You should do Aquafuel right now.
So the first time that I've had to deal with a popped boat on the river was last year. When we were running the Illinois at like 100 CFS, I think we put on at 102, which is
low,
a quarter of the recommended IK flow. we were portaging submarine hole, and we were portaging the boats loaded, and one of my buddies slipped and dropped the boat and dropped it onto a freshly broken piece of serpentine, which is basically like obsidian, if you know, people don't know. And so put a 2-inch gash on that boat. And we just put some tape on it and kind of got it, you know, like limply inflated. And we paddled, I can't remember how much more we paddled that day for, you know, like another hour or something. But you know, it was clearly not holding air. And, so anyway, we got down to, we call it waterfall camp. There's like a on the right with two waterfalls. And literally all I did, I didn't have anything to clean it. All I had was AquaSeal. It's just over a 2-inch gash. I know because I had the, the Tenacious tape that the same company sells, that there are these 2-inch circle patches.
Yeah, yep.
And that's what wouldn't hold air. And it was because the tear went just past that. Anyway, so I put the boat on a flat rock, where the tear was, and I just kind of like wiped it off with my hand. You know, like I didn't, there was no cleaning it, or I just like wiped off the dust and dirt, and I put an aqua seal patch over that hole and just, you know, like made sure that it was bigger and rounder than the rest of the hole. And then we went to bed and we woke up and we pumped the boat up hard the next day and it held air. And I did, I don't know, like 4 or 5 river trips after that.
That's crazy. Wait, it's just aqua seal? Nothing else. Just aqua seal.
I don't want to spoil it, but I've actually got an aqua seal project that, we'll see how good aqua seal is. And if it does this, it will do anything that a boat needs it to do.
Wow.
That's awesome. I love aqua seal.
I've done enough neck gasket repairs to hate aqua seal. And not because it doesn't work, I just hate working with it. And mainly because I hate doing gasket repairs.
Gasket repairs are the worst.
So every time I see aqua seal, I'm annoyed. But not because it's not good, because I just hate dealing with it. But I've never used it for anything but gasket repairs. I probably should.
It holds air, and I pump my boats up relatively hard when I paddle it. I probably pumped that boat up to like 5 PSI with just the aqua seal repair on it.
Do you think that's crazy? I never would have thought aqua seal would do that. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's good to know.
Yeah.
And that's also with no prep work. You know, like I bet if you would like MEK the hole, it would hold even better and for longer.
That makes me think we take those back rafts out a lot and we tear them on a semi-regular basis. And we sew them, and it makes me think we should aqua seal over the sew.
That would be...
It would hold longer.
Yeah, but also the sew is not prevent... Like, it doesn't need to prevent air from going in and out
of that space.
But it would probably make the sew last longer.
Yeah,
it would definitely make the sew
I'm always worried about the threads getting caught on a rock and then coming off.
Yeah, if we aqua seal over it, definitely help.
That's a good idea. I should go buy some.
You're going to go take like a half gallon of aqua seal on your next trip.
That's not worth the wait.
On this international trip coming up, you're just going to like half your backpack some aqua seal.
Sometimes it's annoying when you open the thing aqua seal and then to like it glues itself shut and then it's really hard to get back open.
Yeah.
Which is maybe why the little tubes are good for like that type of thing. You just have a couple of little tubes. Yeah. But I did find if you put your open aqua seal in the freezer and then like after you use it, put it in the freezer, and then you use it again. You put it in hot water for like 15 minutes, and then it opens right back up.
Oh, that's cool. That's actually
the company's, was it Gearaid? That's how they tell you to store it in the freezer.
Yeah, totally.
Huh?
But I did that, and someone's like, I didn't know you do that. And I was like, oh yeah, it's way easier. You can reuse your tube of aqua seal that way, instead of just being like, I can't get this open again.
Man, huge tips. I'm gonna try to become an aqua seal person again.
Gear of the week is aqua seal.
Yeah, well, we're about to do a trip for 3 weeks with back rafts, and we're assuming we're gonna tear some, so we brought an extra back raft, and they only weigh 10 pounds. So throwing an extra back raft in your bag is not a big deal, except that it's expensive to own an extra back raft just to have a spare boat. Yeah, even on the Chetco, Emily and I, we bring a spare back raft,
which we use
every time. But now that we know that we can sew it, and if I can aqua seal the top, then maybe we don't need the spares because it'll last longer, hopefully.
Yeah.
The great part is that it only needs 12 hours. So, like, totally. You just camp and do it before you go to bed, and when you wake up, it's good to go.
Yep. Because we could sew the repair in the field, and then when we get to camp, put aqua seal over it.
Yeah, make it last longer.
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. That'll save us from bringing extra boats.
Yep.
10 pounds. So I thought of gear of the week, and my gear of the week is the Werner 4-piece paddle. They're just so well done. You can paddle it like a regular paddle. You won't even notice it's a 4-piece.
Except they're really hard to get apart.
Yeah.
I recently had to work really hard to get mine apart because it had been together for so long because I was using it like a normal paddle.
Yeah. So if you leave your 4-piece together for a year, it might be hard to get apart. But they're perfectly made so that when you put it together, it doesn't really feel that much different than a regular paddle.
Oh, no. I paddle with it regularly for sure.
And they make a great spare, and then for international travel, for just throwing your bag.
Yep.
Or for hiking into a run, you have to carry a big, long paddle. They're pretty sweet. So I just thought of my gear of the week.
Awesome.
My only issue with those is that they only make them up to 209.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not long enough for inflatable kayaks, huh?
Yeah, what paddle, what length paddle are you paddling, Matt, for your boats?
I recommend to everybody, and every paddle that I've sold has been a 230. And no one has complained about it yet.
Yeah, that's with ours. That's we paddle between 230s and 240s. That's, yeah, you got to have a nice long paddle.
Yeah, Eric, you made that recommendation to me last year to go 230, 240, and we get a bunch of 230s, and they're sweet.
Although really, makes such a difference. Yeah, on all of our ducky stuff, coming from a hard shell background, I just use my hard shell paddle, which is like a 197.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't know the difference because I've never used a 230.
You have a lot more leverage to keep yourself in the boat.
And then going, yeah, I totally get that because I oftentimes want my knees because it's easier to reach the water that way.
Yeah. Oh, I've had a bunch of people try to convince me to go shorter. I learned on that trip that you took me on the East Cork Hood, that I will never go down to a 210 or below.
What did you use that day?
I think it was a 210. It might have been a little bit bit shorter, but it's not long enough.
I use a 200 just because that's my hard shell paddle. I'm not going to have a separate inflatable kayak and hard shell paddle. I see that it should be longer. I've just never bought another paddle.
Yeah, and with that, I could see that.
Yeah.
But if you're just doing an inflatable kayak, then buying a short paddle like that is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. So you're saying 230. Eric, you're saying 230, 240.
Yeah, it would depend on the boat. Like, boat specific, probably, but 230 would be the minimum that I would ever get in an inflatable kayak with. I've paddled it with a hard shell, and it just, like, it's obnoxious. Like, once you paddle the longer paddle, yeah, it's so frustrating how little power and bracing power and stuff that you have with the short paddle.
Yeah. So,
no way. Awesome. So, yeah, my gear of the week is a longer inflatable kayak. So, awesome. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks, Matt, for coming on. Thanks, Emily, for being a part of it and helping host.
Thanks for having me.
Priscilla will be around next time, maybe. Thanks for hanging out and listening. Hopefully, you know, you enjoyed the show and listen to Matt and get out and paddle his boats. And we'll see you at the next pod. All right.